Welcome back to the Daughters of the Moon podcast. We're so glad that you can join us for another week.
You sure are. We love it.
And today we have a special guest with us, Glenn Klausner. He's a nationally and internationally renowned psychic medium residing in New York City, who for nearly three decades has been reuniting thousands of people from all over the world with their loved ones who have transitioned. He exhibited intuitive abilities with communicating to non-physical spirits at the age of four, by making predictions and relaying messages for family and friends. As a teenager, he further explored these abilities through his communications with the spirit world, and by the early 1990s, he began conducting readings for growing steady clientele worldwide. He's been featured since 2002 as a tested legitimate medium on Bob Olson's website. We'll put the link for that down below. In addition to communicating with departed loved ones, humans, and pets, he has also given psychic readings and intuitive coaching for everyday life guidance. He's available for seminars, teaching classes, media appearances, and consultations to assist families with intuitive children. He's also been featured as a guest on a plethora of radio programs and talk radio shows and podcasts. So welcome, Glenn. It's very nice of you to join us tonight.
It sure is.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Kim and Barb. Thanks for having me.
Yes. So we kind of gave a little bit of a bio. Can you tell us kind of how you got started and where you are on your journey with this?
Well, I mean, as you read in that profile, I mean, when I was like somewhere between four and five years old, the first spirit I actually had in my childhood home in Brooklyn, New York, where I grew up, it was a little girl who would have been my little sister. So she was the first spirit, and also my mom's dad, who passed over a few years before I was born. So sometimes I'd see him, and he was the one that I would sometimes give the messages like to somebody like my mom. But then between my 9th and 10th birthdays, it started to open more, and I would get these psychic feelings like, so let's say you were my neighbors, and I sensed that you were going to be ringing the doorbell before you even rang the doorbell. And or the phone would ring before, this is long before the caller ID stuff, you know, and the rotary phones. And I would say to my mom, grandma's phone, the phone ring. And then it was just some interesting predictions, family predictions that I had made that actually came to pass. And when that happened, I was like, wow, I must really, you know, as a child, you don't think like this. But I mean, I thought to myself, it must be like, there must be something there. So, but when I got into the teen years, after my last of my grandparents passed, my mom's mom, when I was like 16, my psychic senses seemed like they started to open even more. And by the time I got to about 20, when a friend of mine passed away, it really even opened more. And that's when I really started to do like more readings for friends at random. I wasn't doing professionally at the time. I would just do, like, if you're my friends, I would sometimes say certain things, or it would just, however that was. And then finally, by the time I got into my, into that period of like around the early to mid 1990s is when I decided to do it as a full-time career, because it just kept coming to me more and more, and more people, even my friends, kept saying, oh, you want to do this for a career. So, you know, when you have more than one person telling you the same thing and they don't even know each other or what they're saying to me, it's, to me, I took it as the universe was telling me, this is my path.
Yeah.
You bet. I bet the universe was telling you, that's beautiful. And you listen, that's even better.
Yeah,
and that's always a good thing, because I know, like, even as a youngster, I had some abilities and things when I was young, but I didn't really put them into play per se. But it's interesting to me how it seems to happen to youngsters, and then, you know, a lot of times I think as adults we close kids down to it so that they don't believe or they don't listen, and then, you know, so I'm assuming that your parents were very supportive of that.
Well, I came from a divorced household, and so my mom, who was very psychic herself, was supportive of that. My dad wasn't into that, but ironically, 30 years ago this month, I had gone to Fort Myers, Florida, to visit my dad and my stepmother. They're all deceased now, my parents and my stepmother. But oh, thank you. It's okay. When I went to Florida to visit them, I wasn't doing readings full time at that point. I actually didn't even have a job. I was visiting, and like I said prior, I was doing some readings sometimes for friends at random, but I wanted to do a career in music. That was really what I was wanting to do at that time. And I had some of the opportunities to make music through the years and perform and stuff. But in that moment in time, what's really interesting is my stepmother took me one day to this New Age bookstore in Fort Myers, Florida, called Planet Earth Book Center, which doesn't exist anymore. But the location that she took me to, which I'd end up working at that store 4 years later when it was in a different location at Fort Myers. But she, when we, I remember when we pulled up, you know, and you see the signs as Planet Earth Book Center, and you can see all these crystals in the window and, you know, stuff that's in there in the metaphysical shop. And I looked at my stepmother, her name was Dolores, and I said, Dolores, you know, are you into this stuff? She goes, yeah, but I feel like I was meant to bring you here. And I don't, and it was kind of interesting how that happened, because maybe my dad did tell her something that I had some, the psychic stuff, but it, he never really, he thought when you're dead, you're dead. He didn't believe in any of that stuff. He believed in me once I became doing it professionally. And, but I went into the store and I met the owner and I met some people. And ironically, you know, I didn't work there then, but when I moved to Fort Myers in 1998, I went into that shop to see if I could get a job, even though it was in a different location. It was actually in a nicer location by that point. And the owner, who claimed that she remembered me, because even though my hair was longer, but now my hair was short and back. And until I took out my driver's license and then I showed her, she says, oh, now I remember you, Glenn from New York. And she's a Southern woman. But she, I said to her, her name was Mary Alice Warren, and I give her credit for this because she really helped catapult my career before even Bob Olson entered into my life. But Mary Alice, when I was in her store and telling her that I was doing readings and I was looking to work at it, she said, oh, okay. And all I said to her, I says, you know, there's a man standing next to you, says his name is Philip and he's your husband. She said, you're hired. And I'm like, what do you mean? She goes, that is my husband. His name was Philip. And that's it, you're hired. It was that was like, she wasn't even testing me. I was like, really? And she was like, right on the spot, she was like, when can you start? I'm like, next week when I move here. And then that really helped get a lot of that exposure that I was on radio and TV and a lot of press stuff. And then when I fast forwarded a couple of years later into 2002, when Bob Olson had somehow discovered me and tested me to be on his website, which I've been there now for almost 22 years.
Wow.
That, you know, really helped catapult my career too.
Yes, absolutely. Well, and that's amazing. And I think that's great that you had these experiences that, you know, kind of catapulted you into this and being able to do this as a full-time position. Because it's so interesting to me that people, you know, come to mediums to find out about their loved ones that have passed. And I think it gives them some closure as well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's one of the greatest gifts, you know, in being a medium. It that in itself is a gift, as you know. But the real gift, I always, when people go, oh, you have a gift, they go, I think I have a really amazing ability. And it is a gift when I connect with people like yourselves and channel your loved ones. But the real gift is the healing that it brings to people. The fact that, you know, someone's loved one can come through with information, there's no way I could even Google it because it's not, doesn't exist, let's say. Let's say it's your father-in-law's brother who you met a few times and came to your house. And like, that is a real, like, you know, or maybe it's the mother-in-law, your mother-in-law's brother, you know, so it's a real way around. Yeah. And then even maybe stuff you don't know that you can't validate, and you find out from another family member that that was all true, what was said in the reading, and then it gets authenticated. It's, to me, those are really cool experiences.
They really are.
Yeah. They really are. I agree. It's so interesting to me. Like, so do you feel like anybody could have this ability?
I do believe that everybody on this planet, like animals, all human beings have psychic ability, right? Is everybody meant to be a psychic and a medium? No, there's a big responsibility in being a medium and dealing with people's grief and all that. It's a big responsibility, no different than if you're a doctor or, you know, anything like that. Does everybody have that psychic ability? I believe absolutely, because it's used every day in life. But again, I don't believe that everybody's meant to have that as a profession.
Right. Right. I agree with you.
You know,
I think that some of us are meant to follow that path. And I think that we get, with me, every time I'd walk away from it a little bit, it would come back to me like, oh, no, no.
Don't even think
of it. And, yeah. You know, it just calls you. It calls you when you should be doing it.
It's a coin. It's sort of like with me, my whole love of music since I'm a little boy and playing musical instruments. And I still have that love for it. It's one of my passions, right? But I knew I was not meant to be, quote unquote, and I put this in quotation marks, with air quotation marks, a rock and roll star. I mean, it looked like one. You know? But I know that wasn't my path. That doesn't mean I can't ever make music or play music, but it wasn't meant for me to be a career. My path is to be who I am as a medium.
True. Do you still play then?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. All the time.
What do you play?
Well, I'm a singer, songwriter, guitar player, and I play bass and I play a little bit of piano. And yeah,
wow.
So I still love that playing because it's a music is so beautiful. Music and mediumship really are very similar, actually, especially if you're a songwriter and you're channeling music through you and wondering how a song gets composed, you know, and similar. So yeah, I love music, but I know it, you know, I'm not going to go be a touring professional musician at this point.
Not now, anyway.
No, not these days.
No, and now you have something that you love, which I think is a well-needed thing. Like I say, is there's so many people that need that person to channel that stuff in for them to know and have that closure. Because I think when we're in that time of grief, it's so hard, and you know. And there's been so much, you know, it's unfortunate there is all these people out there that are not real that give true mediums a bad name. So how would you suggest if somebody was going to find a medium, like how would they go about it? What's a good way to do it that they can find somebody that's legitimate?
Well, it's a great question, you know, because it's excluding the people that you see on TV that are notable for what they're notable for. So, you know, a lot of those folks are many years out and waiting list, obviously. So to find people that are not as popular as them, if you will, the internet's a really good thing. And I think really watching the testimonials that are there help. And then looking at a track record, and I don't think it needs to have 20 books and been on 1,000 radio programs. But I think if there's some sort of track record there, and even nowadays with social media, so, you know, if you've seen people that are posting videos on YouTube and Instagram and all that, and you kind of get a feel, you know, it's like this thing, like you're looking at, especially when you can see somebody and you hear them and there's a feel thing, you just know. When people tell me that they felt drawn to me, you know, by looking at my website, whether it's the picture or it's the information that's there, or just hearing me on different podcasts that I've been on and radio shows, then I think that really helps. It kind of gives you the feeling like, yeah, that's the person, you know, I'm going to go with.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the credibility is important, especially, you know, if we're talking about mediums, you know, same thing with psychics, but in the case of mediums, the accuracy, you know, because you don't want to just go, okay, I got somebody's father here, or just go like, okay, actually, let me rephrase that. Like if you go, do you know anybody with a J name? And it's like, well, yeah, I might know 100 people with a J name, right? So it's to get kind of specific. So go like, hey, do you have a mom figure that's name is Janet or Jeanette? Like, so even if you're close to that Janet sound, but it's like Jeanette or Jeannie or something, you know, and you're kind of working, because sometimes you hear it really clearly and sometimes you get it in kind of that formation. And you got to trust it. And I would recommend even anybody who was practicing mediumship on other people. The key way, like I did it as a youngster, was really just you're developing it. You're practicing. So you trust the impression again. So like with you and your mom, I mean, you've been in the business, so you know. So like I used to do this with my mom. When I was a teenager, and I look back on it with laughter now. Like I could be at work somewhere when I was a teenager working, and I would just tune into like what my mom had for lunch that day at home. And I'd come home, I'd go, you had a tuna fish sandwich for lunch at 12:30? She'd be like, yeah. And you can say, well, he knew her. That would be, but you know, every day my mom would have not necessarily eaten a tuna fish sandwich, you know.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, I think, really trusting your gut. Sometimes even to this day, all these years later, when I do a reading and somebody, even if it's the most kookiest thing if I think of and a client validates it to me, I'm like, no, dude, that's like exactly accurate. I'm like, the look on my face, I'm like, really? You know?
Yeah.
I get it. Even I get like an awe of it. So that's the thing. So yeah, if somebody's looking for a really good medium, you know, the site that I've been on for Bob Olson has helped, because him being a former private investigator and it was a big skeptic. So his site has credibility, but you know, there's not a lot of websites out there that have for mediums like myself. So I think, again, if you're searching for someone that is the not known ones on television or not on Bob's site like myself, is to really just check how their website is, the testimonials, or if you're on, don't be afraid to even ask people, reach out. Like if they're on social media, maybe write to a person who left a comment on that medium's page and they had a reading. I would say reach out to people about their experience. Yelp, one thing I do want to say, Yelp, you have to be careful, because Yelp, you know, is there's such a mixed bag of that. And I've seen that there's some really nice reviews of me on Yelp and some not so nice reviews. And sometimes I really wish that the client would have addressed me in that reading and say, hey, this wasn't my loved one. I wish they would have said that instead of waiting like months later to write maybe a negative review, because I would have dealt with them in that reading.
Yeah.
But that's the only thing. Yelp, I would say, like, is a mixed bag, because you can make it somebody who was not happy that I didn't get their mom and they're writing now a review about it.
Yeah.
So sorry for the long-winded answer, but I thought that could help somebody, because I realized people will trust those Yelp reviews, and you have to be careful with that, because you don't know why the person maybe, you know, if you see that somebody had a lot of bad negative reviews, like 100 or 200, then you kind of go, okay, there's something
legit going on here.
Yeah.
No, but I think you're always going to find people out there that are just negative anyways. And I know with myself, when I'm doing readings with somebody, I'll say, the more honest you are with me, the better this reading is going to be for you.
Of course.
So it's not like you're trying to drag anything out of them. It's just saying to them, if you're going to hold, well, you know, let me in, sort of thing. And I think that's important too, right? That they understand people that, you know, don't be afraid of us. We don't bite. Well, at least you don't bite, I don't think, and I don't bite. Ken
doesn't bite. Right? No, I haven't bitten anybody.
if they could just, if they're coming to us for the information they want to know, so lighten up, and let it happen, because if they pull away, I say to them, if you leave here and you don't believe anything I said, cool.
Right, that's the whole thing of doing readings. It's like, because even when in my case, when people are asking their loved ones, let's say, for certain guidance and stuff, and I realize that deceased people, even though they have a different perception because they're in a non-physical dimension and they don't have all these judgments like we do here in physical bodies, but like, you know, if you have a grandmother that comes through and suggests maybe, like, let's say, like, you have this lovely room here in your home, Kim, with that. I love that green because it reminds me of a place I used to live at and I had to paint it with that same sage green color, but and I've done it sometimes with feng shui stuff with people who kind of just maybe sometimes move something, and that might open up a whole other wonderful world for a person that might be having some issues going on, whether it's health or finances or whatever, or relationship. But like, you know, if the spirit tells you to move that nice, it looks like some chakra thing behind you with all the colors. And let's say they tell you move that from the right, behind the right side of you, to the left side. Now, will it really make a difference? Maybe, maybe not. But ultimately, you may go, all right, I'll try it. And then you're like, it doesn't feel right. I gotta move it back. So I always try to give the client, like, you know, don't necessarily rely on the deceased person to, you know, when they're giving you advice, you still have the responsibility of whether to take it or not.
Yeah. Right. And we are strong believers in that you still have free will, right? So, usually when I've done a reading for somebody, I usually say, here, it's like a map. I'm going to give you what I get, but you still have choice.
That's right.
You don't have to, just because I say, drive down the road left, you don't have to if that's not what you choose to do, right? If your gut's saying, no, I'm not feeling that, you have to listen to that as well. So,
yeah. And something I'd like to point out, which is, I think, is very important, because giving people their power, for them to stay in their power about things. Like if a client says to me, do you ever see me get, can you ask my mom if they see me get married? I'm like, first of all, would you have asked your mom or whoever the loved one is that when they were in a physical body? Probably not, unless they were maybe a professional psychic, you might, or something. But most likely you're not going to ask somebody that is a loved one of yours, do you see me ever getting married, or am I going to be successful? And that is something that I think if anybody can learn something is to not rely on a deceased person to provide those answers. Because if a client says to me, do you ever see me getting married? I ask them, do you see yourself getting married? And if they're like, I don't know, I'm like, well, why would you think that the deceased person has any more, you know, that answer? And then one thing I will say, there have been readings I've done where a spirit will accurately predict somebody who's going to meet somebody and they get married or have a kid or whatever. But I still think it's ultimately to sort of be mindful when asking those kinds of questions to our deceased loved ones. You know, do you see me being successful? It's like, why don't you see yourself being successful in whatever it is of life, you know?
Yeah.
And that's the, I think, the little misconception about how us as mediums channel deceased people, you know? So it's great, you know, even for me, like when I want maybe some guidance from my loved ones, but ultimately I know that, you know, even if you, like you said before, if you they say go left and you go right, it's the free choice.
That's right. Thank goodness.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. And I've heard, like, listen to some mediums on different podcasts and things like that. And it's like, a lot of times I think people get frustrated because they have an idea in their mind of, you know, my grandmother's going to come and she's going to, I'll know it's her because there'll be a blue butterfly, and grandma comes and there's no blue butterfly. And they're like, oh, well, you don't know what you're talking about. Even if everything else makes sense. Right. Mm-hmm. Because I think our deceased come how they want to come and have their own personalities. Do you find that people that have passed on have the same personalities that they had when they were living?
Slightly. And it's funny about that, what you just said, because it's true. Like, somebody can expect that grandma's going to come through about that blue butterfly, and grandma may be talking about the pizza pie you just ordered earlier that day. And you're like, oh, well, that's not the blue butterfly. But it's like, grandma obviously saw you ordering the pizza pie, right? But in a case, I'm sorry, the last part you had just said about, oh, I'm sorry, Kim, you, I got
lost. Oh, it's their personalities once they're deceased.
Oh, yeah, it's amazing. Well, I think the reason why that is, so like, you know, let's say you have an Uncle Frank who is a funny guy. He's going to come through that way because you can validate that. I have seen plenty of cases where, let's say, a person wasn't that nice, you know, on Earth, which unfortunately happens, as you know. And even though the deceased people that have been like that on Earth, when they're talking to me, they're always nice to me. So I have to tell the client, hey, this loved one wasn't nice with you. And so they can get that vow. Because, you know, all of a sudden, if that same grandma with the pizza pie or the butterfly was like a real, not such a nice lady, but she goes through, hi, sweetheart. You'd be like, that's not grandma. So, but I found most of the time, like even when my dad or my mom appeared to me, even though they've been deceased a while, but their quirks and personality and their humor is still there. But I realized that they probably only do it in that moment when they're dealing with me, because I know it's them. But if they appeared to me like from some other lifetime, I'd be like, who the heck is that? But I definitely know that people who were really mean-spirited here don't carry that same vibration after they've crossed over.
Yeah, they come from a more loving place, I think, once they pass through.
Yeah. A majority of people who have passed on, they go into that light and they go back to that, like, unconditional love. Maybe there's a small percentage, 1-2% of people who pass that still kind of, like, hang in this world more, you know, for whatever reason. So they may still kind of have those earthly personas, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, like, oh, my house. It's like, no, it's not your house anymore. You don't live there, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So what is something that, like, when people come to you for readings or mediumship, what is a thing that they ask, like one of the more popular things? Sorry, my brain was like, went on holidays there.
No, that's great. It's a great question.
You're loud.
I think the most common thing for people, you know, they want to know that their loved ones are still existing somewhere out. And I always use the analogy of, like, the television that I have in the background here. TV's off, but there's programs going on. Same thing with radio or social media. There's people obviously writing right now on Facebook or other places, and we're not on there. So that's where it comes to me. Spirits are always omnipresent. They're everywhere, right? Sort of like, it's not really above us or below us, it's all around us. But the common question I think from my observation of all the years of doing readings, one of the most common questions that I'm often asked is, if I'm reading for somebody, they want to know if that loved one is going to be there for them when they cross over.
Oh, yeah.
That's probably the number one question in pertaining to that, I would say.
Yeah.
That makes sense to me.
Yeah, it does make sense. Yeah. Tough question.
Right. And you know, it's hard to say because, like, you know, and I've explained that even if that person, let's say it's, you know, your grandma, and she reincarnates back, they go, well, how does grandma going to see me if I reincarnate? And I use the analogy, I'll use this water, for instance. I say water is the soul, the glass is the body. So even if we take water and dip it into another body, you know, another glass, so to speak, I'm just using that, as you can see with my fingers, I don't have a glass here to do it. But it's just the particles, you know, sort of a little bit go in. And if you understand science of how our bodies are engineered, I think that's this, how it really works. But the soul, the water, is always going to be the water, no matter what. Even if you, you know, like when you make coffee, right? You know how the water goes into the coffee machine and you put the coffee in and now comes, it just tastes different.
Yeah,
true.
I think also in the music terminology, like if you think of all the old records back in the day, like guys like Elvis that would record these records, all the old people that did that back, and then it would be on vinyl records, and then it would also be on, they would actually record it on tape in the studio, but then it would go on to like the vinyl record and then audio cassettes, 8 tracks back in the day, and it became MP3s, and now you can stream them on, you know, these digital download sites, and it's still the same artist and same song, it's just in a different format, right. So that's how I look at reincarnation as well.
I think that's a good way to look at it,
because I agree.
Great question though.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, great question, because it's true. I had to think for a second, like, what is the most number one thing that people ask me that's common? And it would be if their loved one is going to be there for them when they cross over.
Yeah, and that really does make sense, because I think we all want to know that somebody is going to be there to greet us or to, you know, wait for us. So do you think then, I guess, with reincarnation, do you think that when our soul leaves our body and we reincarnate, then can we still talk to that? Is there a percentage of that soul that stays that is still that person?
Yeah.
I don't know if that makes sense.
No. Well, even now, the fact that you, your mom, and myself, there's a higher version that exists non-physical. I really believe that if we took 100% of us from spirit, the soul, into our human body, every one of us on this planet would be in bliss. No one would be having wars with themselves and with other people. It would be complete bliss. So I think that percentage, again, using the water, if you're taking, you know, let's say a quarter of it or three quarters or whatever it is into a new body, that main component of the soul is still non-physical, and you can dialogue with that version. But then again, when you look at the soul, if you think about how many incarnations it's been, it's like, I mean, that's why when I channel deceased people, they have to come through in a way that you can recognize them. Because if your grandma came through looking like she did from the 1500s, you'd be like, who the heck is that? I'm pleased to tell you, I love the 1500s. I love all the history of it. And then you think, well, she's coming through with that information to validate it's her, right? But yeah, I know that deceased people generally, I'll tell you something really funny, actually. I did a reading not too long ago with somebody, and their loved one came through, and I described the personality of the person, but what happened was the spirit made themselves appear to me very thin, more slender, like Adonis looking.
Yeah.
And the client said to me, are you sure? I'm like, that's how they're appearing to me. He says, this person was like 300 pounds, but everything describing about them is them. I go, well, I guess in the spirit world, they're not 300 pounds. They made themselves look like somebody was some guy like running on a beach like David Hasselhoff in Baywatch or something. And but then the client explained to me that they know that he used to kind of do that anyway, like even with his weight, he was still trying to be like that Adonis energy. Right. So it kind of made sense, but it was incorrect as far as his weight went. It was because of him. He presented himself that way.
Sometimes I think that they challenge us that way just to keep us honest.
Right.
The spirit guides, like, there's like, you know, like mine like to swear. And and it's really interesting because it's like, really, you want me to say that? I'm not going to, right? Because sometimes it's just like, no, I'm not, right? That's because they have a personality of their own too.
Well, you know, you talk about that. I'll share something really quick. One of the hardest, I've done a lot of readings that have been really, really tough. And probably one of the hardest ones was the first 9/11 reading I had did with a spirit in the World Trade Center. And the guy's sister, this particular man who passed in the World Trade Center in the company called Cantor Fitzgerald, which was the building that had the antenna on top. And he was a lovely soul. I didn't know him on earth, but he was one of seven children. One of his sisters had actually already been a client of mine prior. So the 2 days after 9/11 had happened, she had called me. I was living in Florida, and she just happened to get me on the phone as I was ready to leave for the day. And she said, "Oh, Glenn, did I catch you in okay time?" I said, "Yeah." I said, "Did you?" And I just, for some reason, I said, "Did you have somebody pass from World Trade Center?" And she said, "Yeah, my brother." I said, "Hold on, hold on." And I hear this guy say, "Hey, my name is George." And he tells me he worked in that tower with the antenna on top, up at the hunt around the floor. And he told me that his wife was on the phone with his sister. So I says, "Is that true?" She said, "Yes." And then his wife said hello to me. And they thought he may be still alive under the rubble. And ironically, his business card was found by a firefighter, and the business card was totally intact. Wow. And but what he said to me that day, because when they thought he was still, you know, maybe possibly alive, he said to me, I guess I can, even me saying what I'm about to say kind of is a little weird to me, but I'm going to say it because it was his way of validating that he was deceased, because he was in the first World Trade Center bombing in 1993. So he says to me, "Oh no, can you tell them that I was blown to smithereens?" I go, "I can't say that." And I'm telling you, tell them that. I can't say that to them, even though your sister knows me, but your wife doesn't know me. I go, I can't say that. And I'm a native New Yorker, you know, so I don't want them to think of like I'm poke. And he said, "You don't understand. That's my humor." And he told me that he was in the first bombing. And when he came home that day, he said to his wife that he was almost blown to smithereens. So when I said to them, I said, "Look, I explained what he has some interesting sort of way of telling this to me." And I said, "You know, I'm not trying to make a joke out of what happened." And when they were okay with what I was about to say. So when I told them that, they started to laugh and they said, "That's definitely him. He used that statement from the prior bomb." And even though it was hard for me to say those words, and it was hard probably for them to hear it, but at least they knew that it really was him by that statement. So that was probably one of the toughest things I ever said, because of the event that had happened, and then his choice of words to kind of validate that it really was him.
Yeah.
Have you always been in New York?
I live in New York City now, and I'm from Brooklyn, but I lived in Florida from 1997 to 2007.
Right. So are you, this is probably... My daughter's going to go, "Oh, yeah, here we go." She probably already knows.
So I know where you got.
my big thing was John Lennon, and being from New York, and that's someplace I've always wanted to go, because I need to do that. And have you ever had anything come up about him or about him? Have you? Well, do you want to share?
Yeah. Yeah, well, first of all, John's building where he had lived and where his life came to an end is here in my neighborhood. Oh. And interestingly enough, when I was a little boy, I didn't really know much about the Beatles, because I was growing up on a lot of the 1970s rock and roll. So I knew a little bit about the Beatles, but not to the extent that I would know now. I remember, I think the first Beatles record I had was Magical Mystery Tour. Actually, it was the first.
Oh, yeah.
But what's interesting is that when he had passed, I was sleeping that night because I was in elementary school. And the next morning, I woke up the daily newspaper with him and the guy that did the situation was on the cover. And my mom, I looked, and my mom explained to me what had happened. And I said to her, "I can't go to school today. What are some?" And she's like, "Why?" I said, "Well, what if some fan shoots me?" Now, where would that come out of a little kid? I don't know. But I didn't go to school that day. And anyway, fast forward a couple of years later, when I was almost a teenager, my mom and I lived briefly at my grandmother's apartment here in the city in my neighborhood. And my mom and I went to the Dakota building. And, you know, it was very interesting. I was standing and I was looking at the driveway and the whole thing. And the doorman that was there at the time, he said to me, "Can you see him?" And I'm like, "Yeah." you know, it was, I don't know why it came up, but then I fast forward many years later now. I fast forward, I'm just thinking how many years later, I would say nearly 2 decades later, I'm living in Florida, and I was composing music. I was composing a song called Still. Well, it was two songs at that time I was composing. One was called Shangri-La, and one was called Stillness Speaks. And wow. And I got that title Stillness Speaks off of the Eckhart Tolle book. And it didn't start off with the title; it started off with the piano music for that song. But then, and I built the lyrics around it. Then I got that title because I was looking for a title. I'm thinking what, and that book was in my apartment. I'm like, Stillness Speaks, that would work. And anyway, but John had actually channeled those songs to me, and the guy, my friend who helped put my song Stillness Speaks together, because I'm not a fluent piano player, so there's a section of that song which you can actually hear under my music name, Glenn with two N's, Kid with two D's.
Okay.
The part of the song Stillness Speaks where I'm not, there's no vocal, which is like what they call a bridge section. All these chord changes are so unique, the piano, because this John was, when I was with the guy that helped me compose that part, I was like, hey, how do you play this on piano, like this E flat and 9 11, whatever, these weird chords? And he got it. But John was writing those chords to me on the wall.
Wow.
You know, as a translator. And he, because he's a more proficient piano player than me, he got the whole part. So he said, and I get it. And now looking back years later, when I listen to that song, there's a part of it where when it gets a climb up, I go, oh, that sneak. He made me do a little bit of what's called the McCartney song with a little luck. It almost has that same little movement in it. And wow. But since when I came back to New York was really interesting, in a long story short about him. And funny enough, I've never channeled him for his loved ones, but I've met both his wives, both his sons, musicians that have worked with him, his girlfriend May Pang, I've met her, Jack Douglas, who was the producer with him the night that he had passed, prior to his passing. And for some photographers that have worked with him, I've met them. And anyway, when I came back to New York, after I was here a year, he came to me. I was in my bedroom. And he said, I was playing my guitar. And he said, oh, you got to, you know, it's time to record another record. You got to write new songs. I go, new, you know, I don't even have any new songs. He goes, I'll channel them through you. He goes, but you're going to take those songs, Shangri-La and Stillness Speaks, which I had previously recorded in Florida. And he told me I was going to, should redo them better, which I ended up doing. But I said to him, okay, if I meant to, this is where the story, I'll close it out here because it's long, so I'll try to close it quicker. I said to him, if that's the case, I want a record producer who totally gets what this music's about, who is recording in a studio to record at. I want all pro musicians and $50,000 in cash because I knew it would be a costly project.
Right.
He didn't say a word. A couple of days later, I go into Central Park for his birthday. Day at Strawberry Fields at the Imagine, where the Imagine Mosaic is,
right?
And there's a crowd of people. It's a bit chilly, and I notice there's this bass player playing left-handed, the same kind of Hofner bass that Paul McCartney plays. He doesn't look like Paul McCartney, but something drew me to him, and I said, you know, I know I'm meant to meet that guy. When I walked in, actually, in the park, they were playing Watching the Wheels, one of John's final songs. So I leave the park and I'm walking by, I don't meet him that day, this guy, and I walk by John's building and I sent a thought out to him. I go, I know that's the producer. I know that, yeah, I'm meant to meet that guy. Can you arrange it that I meet him somewhere else on another day? So a few days later, there was a street fair here in my neighborhood. And as I was walking up the avenue, there was a diner at the time in this one spot where there's a restaurant now. And this guy, Larry Russell, who ended up becoming the guy that was playing the bass, he was sitting there with his then girlfriend and her mom. And I approached him, and right away, you know, he looked at me and said, oh, I told him, I saw him in the park. And he said, anybody ever tell you look like Paul McCartney? I go, yeah, I get that all the time. Back then, you know, back in the 2008 or 2009. Yeah, it was 2008 where we met. So yeah. I give him my business card. He's like, you're a medium? I'm like, yeah. And I sent him those two songs in particular, and he clearly heard John's energy in there. So we met and talked, discussing a record, and I ended up recording this record with him and with other notable musicians that are also on the album. And even to this day, just really quickly, the last song I had recorded, not with this guy, but there's a song called Give Up the Ghost, and I recorded, my brother plays bass on it, and this drummer, Tommy Price, who also, my brother played in Billy Idol and Joan Jett, and this drummer, Tommy Price, also played in Billy Idol and Joan Jett. And Tommy Mandel, who I met through that guy, Larry Russell, who played on some of my stuff, he's on. I wrote the song on piano, And when I was recording the song, John actually suggested for me to tell this guy, Tommy Mandel, who's a keyboardist, to put in not only the violin and cello from the keyboard, but also a mellotron, which is kind of used like in Strawberry Fields, and a French horn. And at first we didn't think that the mellotron and French horn would work. It actually worked. And I'm like looking, and you know, and it's not the first time I dealt with him, John Spirit, in the studio. And funny enough, when he appears to me, he looks similar to what he did like that last days of his life.
Cool.
Yeah. So sorry for the long story, but you know, you asked, it was like John Lennon going, oh my God, he's and you know, like, it's kind of, I don't know why he chose me to do that, but I'm honored.
You bet. I think it's a great story because in you telling it that way, it shows people that what they can do with you, you know, if you allow the spirits and trust them and, you know, let their mediumship shine sort of thing, and allow those people to come through. Yeah, they can be so much help to us on this plane. You know,
yeah. And I will say this about John Lennon. You know, he is a very chatty spirit. And if anybody has the real pure intention to want to talk to him, he's willing to, he'll talk to you. You know, he's not shy of that. That's why in my case, when he was doing a lot of that music stuff, I really trusted what he was giving and guiding. And I remember one time when I was recording with that guy, Larry Russell, I don't remember which song of mine I was doing, but I was doing the vocal track because I remember being by the microphone to sing. And I got stopped because maybe I was singing a little sharp or a little flat. And John Spirit was right here. And he looked at me and he goes, listen to what the man said, meaning the producer. And I just thought it was funny that he used these references of Paul. But you know what's really strange about something with John? The night that he died in the hospital he was at, as soon as they couldn't work on it, they couldn't revive him, the music that was playing in there, All My Loving, came on.
No way in the hospital.
And that's really more Paul's song. So it's interesting that John has a tendency sometimes Paul's references.
Interesting. That's a very cool story. I'm really, really glad that I asked, and I'm really glad that you have so much familiarity with it and you can share that with us, because when he passed, I was devastated. My kids even said, we listened to John Lennon all day.
And you know, looking at you, Bob, you know, you kind of remind me a little bit of Cynthia Lennon, who I met when she's a very lovely woman. Okay. And so when I look at you, I'm like, oh. And the nicest, when I met her, was that she was doing a book signing at Barnes and Noble, and she looked at me, she says, you know, I have to tell you, remind me a cross between John and Paul. And I said, coming from you, I really am honored by that.
Wow, yes. Oh, that's beautiful. Well, thank you, that nice compliment. I'll take that. Yeah,
but then, found any time to talk to you.
It was so great to share this, and we'd love to have you back and talk about other spirits that have, you know, I'm so connected with music. I exercise to music. My music is my meditation, and I can't hardly go a day without listening to some kind of tunes, or else I feel like I'm in this other world, distant. So thank you for sharing that. That's very cool.
Yes, thank you so much. So if you had a final thought to leave with people, what would it be?
Love. I know it sounds cliche. Yeah, all you need is love. I'll give that with your mom there. But it's really true, because love is, like, to me, the answer of everything. You know, even in stuff that goes on around the world that you and I know that's not that lovey-dovey, obviously. But I think the more that we are being the vibration of love and emanating, even if it's just smiling at somebody or a kind word or feeling good, I think that really the ripple effect that goes out to the world. You know, it's like, even I'm mindful, like, you know, if you write something on social media and you're still permeating love out there and putting it out there, you don't know is that somebody's reading you something you wrote or said, and that maybe they were having a day that was tough for them, and what we said or did raised them up. So right. That, as far as the final thought for you, what you asked there, it's not my final thought of, you know, but love, yeah, definitely love.
Yeah, I like that. I think that's a good message to leave with people. So
I really do.
Tell everybody where to find you.
right here on your podcast.
Perfect, perfect. And we'd love to have you back. So,
love to be back. So, thank you again for having me. So they can find me on my website. You know, it's Glenn with two N's, Klausner.com. So it's Klausner.com. And I'm also on social media like Facebook and Instagram. And I do have a YouTube channel, but I haven't done any videos there, which I'm planning on doing soon. So there's a channel there for me.
Stay tuned.
We'll go check you out. I mean, the podcast. Perfect. Well, I'll put all of those in the show notes. And again, thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure and so much fun to chat with you. And we really enjoyed it. So.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it very much.
Likewise. I've enjoyed this as well. And thank you again for having me on. And all the best to both of you and your loved ones and your audience, and that your podcast, from my mouth to the universe's ears, may your podcast, because you have a great podcast and you're lovely ladies, may it really grow exponentially. Like, may people really be saying the name of your podcast like a household name.
Aww. You're wonderful.
Thank you. Wow. That means a lot. So thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you much. Love both of you. Okay. And let me know when this is airing. So thank you.
Yes, I will definitely. And everybody else, tune into the next one.
You bet.